5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, good evening, good evening. It is the all-new Panic Room, episode 212 on the 5th of November, Bonfire Night, back in Blighty. Of course, we don't have any of that over here, which is, I kind of miss it, but we get to set fireworks off pretty much every other weekend here, so all is good, all is good. So it is, 9:30 Central Time, and other times in other places, in many ways. So welcome to the show. And I'm, you know, without further ado, I'm going to have to bring her on.
Somebody come on, I'm with you.
It's just been so long and on and on and on. I presume,
well,
obviously, you've been following the election there, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Which is,
a mess.
It's sort of degenerated into the farce that I think we all knew it was going to be. Trump himself said, you know, he wouldn't go quietly. And he's putting forward what I fondly call the Mugabe defense, in so much as, you know, you've lost, you know, you've lost, you know, no, I haven't, you know. And it'll be, even when all the results are in, everything, and it's a resounding defeat, and it'll be right, you've lost and you've got to move out and all that. Like, nope, you know, he's just gonna just say no, you know. And he has said pretty much that he's not going to go down that fight. He's launching these lawsuits now for fuck knows what, to stop the counting. I mean, it's just ridiculous, you know. It's just, that's abusing the system, you know. And he's just going to bleat and whine and bitch and, you know, until, I don't know. I don't know what the end is going to be, to be honest with you.
Somebody's
going to have to decide that, look, Trumpy, you know, you've lost fair and square, get out.
You know, I think I feel the worst for all of us that had been so divided. I don't think that I don't remember ever a time when the two political parties have been so divided. I mean, it's so bad. I mean, there was a time that you could have a Republican and a Democrat, you know, have a conversation together and not end in horrible, you know, just bad. And so I don't remember ever a time when it's been as bad as it is now. And I think that because of what is going on with the election, that it's dividing us further because, you know, no matter what happens, there's going to be distrust on both sides. You know, he didn't win. Yes, he did. He didn't, you know, it's bad. It's bad. And I just don't know how it's going to get fixed, you know. So we got that going on, and then, you know,
he's not going to be happy until he's created a civil war, you know. I mean, I guess is technically a possibility, you know. But he, like you say, he's dividing the country. And there's now all, you know, you've got, you know, armed people storming the counting centers, and you've got, you know, this place. I know there's friends near Dallas who are worried, you know, because if Trump doesn't win, there's going to be rioting, you know. And it's just like, this is just, it is scary, you know, what the times we're living in right now. And it's all down to him, the big fat orange twat. It's his fault. He has created this division. And it even in England, I mean, you know, politicians have their differences. I mean, you know, we have them, but nothing quite like this. You know, this is just unprecedented, really.
I made sure yesterday we went out and went shopping for, you know, we could. And you know how many times I've done the hunker down shopping this year? You know, the kind where you're like, okay, well, we don't have to leave the house now for X amount of days because we have, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, and in my life, I don't think I've ever had, you know, ever thought of these things, and I'm doing it now.
I'm still working. We here are still working through my March stockpile of toilet paper. Seriously, we're still using
it.
Yeah, I haven't bought toilet paper in all that time. You know, which is like ridiculous, but. Although, to be fair, it's not a lie. I make the kids use that because it's cheap and nasty, and I spoil my bot with Charmin these days. So, you know, 4-ply.
Heck yeah.
You know, you could actually use it as a quilt. I mean, it is gorgeous. You know, it's like wiping your bottom on puppies. I find. Speaking of puppy, ask me how my puppy. For the listeners at home, I do not wipe my bottom. In fact, my puppy actually she wipes her bottom on me. She'll come and she'll go out in the garden to do a bit. She'll come in and then she sits on me. It's like then there's a little moist patch. And like, all my dogs are all boy dogs. So I'm not quite used to the anatomy of the female dog yet. So she'll come and there's a little moist patch on my leg. And so she's so adorable. She is adorable.
She is. Speaking of pets, you know, our little Misha, it was feeding day for her yesterday. And she, when I put her back in her tank, she did this weird thing where she went she was like slithering in the branch of the little log thing we have in there for her, branch. And she's getting a little chunky now, you know. There's parts of her, we're looking at her and thinking, I hope she's not getting stuck, you know. Doing the little zombie dance there with the mouse, and she snatched it, and she, you know, constricted and killed it as long as she could, you know, it's dead.
Killed
anyway.
It again.
She killed it.
Yeah, I know. Mine are the same. They make sure they're dead.
And yeah, and then she, you know, goes to eat it, and again, we're still thinking. I hope she can get out of this thing that she's crawled halfway into, and she did. So yay, she did.
Oh yeah,
all is well. But there was a couple moments there that I was wondering how we were going to break this branch thing that we have for her. But,
it's amazing
what
they can squeeze themselves into, snakes. I mean, they're just.
Yeah.
It's what makes them good escape artists, the slightest little gap, and, you know, they're out.
I have to say that the boyfriend never thought he would have a snake in his living room, and now he is so good at the zombie dance, you know, with the little mouse
dance.
on the that's what we call it, yeah. He just dances around there, and he makes noises, and then when she gets it, he tugs on it a little bit, so it, you know, makes her think it's alive, and he's so good at it. He is.
Yeah, I do all of that as well. But
yeah.
It's funny with my big snake. You could actually just drop it on the log and she'd go for it. So he'd go for it. But the zombie dancers fawn. And then they, because that way they strike and they constrict and they do all of that. And they'll cling on to it and crush the crap out of it for, you know, quite a while until they're happy it's dead. It's dead. Yep. It was dead before, but it's even more dead now.
Yes. And, you know, my daughter snake, you have to lay it down for him, and he'll mosey over to it later and just start, you know, slowly eating it. But he just, you know, just put it down, leave it there. Maybe he needs a room temperature. I don't know, but he prefers it. Just leave it there, and he just starts to slowly eat it.
Well, it depends what they're used to, you know, if that's how they're raised. If people, you know, the breeders, if they just chuck them in, then they're used to just doing that. Whereas, certainly Monty, when I got him, you know, was used to me doing the zombie dance, just dangling it and then jiggling it about a bit. And it's funny, actually, in the times when he's not been bothered. You know, he's about to shed or it's a bit cold or whatever.
Yeah.
And you can literally slap him in the face with it, with this dead rat. And I have done. I've bounced him in the face with it, and he'll just look at you like, just fuck off. Stop it. Just stop that. You know, thinking, well, if I annoy
him. It's not going to happen.
There's once I pissed him off that much. He actually went for it. He struck it, squeezed it, and then just left it like, right.
Oh, no.
Look, right, you're dead. Now leave me alone.
That's awful.
Yeah, he was just like, I just really annoyed him with it. And he didn't eat it in the end. He did not eat it. It's like, no, don't want it. Don't want
that's
it.
Awful.
Well, the worst is when they do take it and then they don't eat it. Monty did, on our smallest night, he did that. And he dropped it in his water bowl. And about two or three days later, there's this god-awful stench. And what is that stink?
Oh,
because there's this dead rat rotting in his water bowls. Oh, my goodness. How did he, you know, don't do that, fella. Yeah, it was, like, horrible.
Awful.
That was terrible.
Yeah, well, we're still, like, new snake parents, you know, we kind of hover. Not too close, so we don't want to get her, you know, she's nervous or anything, but we sit back and we watch, and so we know how long it takes, and we know what's going on. We're just like first-time parents, you know, how you are when you have that first baby. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, well, that's it. After a while, you get a bit, you know, like I said, I've had mine 20 years now, so you just get, you know, like I said, the first time he stopped eating, and it was like for 4 months, I was worried sick. Absolutely worried sick, and then you started eating again, like, fine, you know. So he's done it a few times over the years. Now you just learn not to worry, because he'll be fine. You know, when he's good and ready, he'll bless. He's a good feeder, actually. The big snake will just eat and eat and eat at any time.
Yeah,
absolutely. Just will. They're one of those species that people power feed them because they're big snakes, which is a bad thing to do. But they will. Whatever there's food, they'll eat it. And I guess they're designed to just eat, you know, make hay while the sun shines. And he will just eat. I mean, we've never done that, but you can. And people do it, and they just get all fat and unhealthy, and that's not good. That's not good. You've got to look after your snake babies. All your babies.
We are. We're trying. Yeah, all of them.
Yeah. So, anyway, speaking of babies, because in many ways, this show is as if you and I had a baby, XD, and I like to think. This is our bastard offspring. Do tell. What have we got coming up on the show this evening?
I know, I was going to say, episode 212, can you believe it's, you know, we've had the two
No,
deaths
I can't.
Yeah, I can't.
No,
okay.
I don't know how that happened, to be honest.
Our first guest, I'm excited, we have a thriller author, C.G. Twiles. I'm hoping I said that right. It looks like Twiles. So she'll probably tell me I butchered it, but that's, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Probably,
and
you usually do.
Later,
you usually do.
I know. And later on in our show, we have 8-time Bram Stoker Award nominee, Scott Elderman. Oh, he's going to be
Edward? Is Edward coming
on
as well?
I don't know. I'm looking right at it.
I hope so.
Scott Edelman.
I want Edward to be on as well. So if we could organize that would be tremendous.
I'm going
to
take another sip of wine and pretend that little bit didn't even happen.
Spoil yourself. open another box there. Right. Okay. Well, without further ado, should we bring our first guest on?
We should. Our first guest is thriller author C.G. Twiles.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Hi. No, thank you. What do we call you? Do we call you C or CG or something else?
You know, I hadn't really thought about that. It's just a made-up name. So, you can call me CG.
CG. Okay, that'll do. And CG is here to talk about her book, The Neighbours in Apartment 3D. I love the tagline, actually. It's very, very apt, actually, for me at the moment. Sometimes home is the most dangerous place to be. So, come on, fill us in.
Well, it's about a woman who is living with a friend of hers while she's separated from her husband because she's recovering. Well, she's a compulsive liar, and so she's recovering. She's in recovery for that, but he got so mad at her for this one lie that she told their son that he asked her to move out, and she can't tell another lie for 6 months before he'll give her another chance or consider it. So she's in therapy, she moves in with her good friend, and then she meets the next door neighbors, and things seem weird, and there's weird noises from their apartment, and then she sees a note on their door. They have a kid staying with them, and the kid had written, "I'm being held," and taped it. So she tries to kind of figure out what's going on next door without telling any lies at the same time, so it's kind of complicated.
Oh wow, I like that. I must, as a plot mechanism, compulsive. Brilliant. Talking about unreliable narrator, that's fantastic. I'm going to steal that idea. So you've been warned.
Reliable, but nobody else is. So that's kind of the irony because nobody, it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. Nobody thinks she's telling the truth of her history, but is telling, but nobody, of course, believes her.
I like that.
Is it
a thriller? Is it a murder mystery? What kind
thriller,
of
thriller? Yeah, like domestic thriller. So it's mostly, it's not about the world blowing up or whatever. It's about, the house being creepy and the people being creepy and where you live being. Yeah. So it's got kind of a Rosemary's Baby vibe to it in that, I was inspired by the neighbors just being these sort of creepy people who had these secrets, but she could kind of hear things through the wall, didn't quite know what was going on. And
I like it. I think we probably all lived
places like, I know I, it's funny if I, I, place I lived in many, many, many years ago back in England, the first house I bought was a semi-detached, I don't know what you call it over here. And we actually heard their second child being, because their bedroom was like separated by turned out to be a thin wall to ours. And we actually heard her giving birth to their second child through our bedroom wall at night. And it's funny because we're late, I wish they'd keep the noise down. We're so bloody inconsiderate. All that.
Have you heard the child being conceived as well, or just
rather horribly? Yes, I think we did. Yeah. I think we did. Moving on.
Very beginning.
Well, speaking of like neighbors, I saw a meme once and it said something about, isn't it odd? Don't you find it odd that, you go and get groceries and come back, and how often do you actually see your neighbors carrying groceries into the house? And I thought,
not ever.
I, Yes.
Never.
That
it's
is
like...
the weirdest thing. It's true. I mean, I'm like, oh my God, is there all, they're all like simulations or something. I don't understand. They don't eat. I don't understand it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Never see a big pigeon. No, there's just millions of pigeons, but you never see a baby pigeon. Kind of like you never see papers bringing in, you know, paper towels and stuff.
Yeah.
So during quarantine, it's been a bit more, like I've seen it a bit more, you know, a little bit more, but it still seems like it should be more than it is.
definitely. I mean, I remember when we first, you know, the pandemic first kind of, you know, happened and everybody was home during the day all the time. Not everybody, but a lot more than normal. And it was kind of neat. There were like neighbors walking up and down the streets, taking their dogs for a walk. Dogs I had never seen in the neighborhood before. People I'd never seen. I'm like, wow, this is so cool. But, you know, because we're home all the time, so we're up in the office upstairs, like, you know, peeking out at them like weird, creepy peepers or something. I but, yeah, that was really cool to watch the, you know, how many people that are, you know, I don't know. You just don't notice people as much. And I don't know. It's strange. But yeah, neighbors can be super creepy. And I'm hoping that I'm not the creepy neighbor, you know. Like there's neighbors, like when I walk outside going, did you see the neighbors? You know, I'm hoping they don't do that to me like I do that to them. So.
I think I am that creepy neighbor. I'm the one that they all talk about.
You are.
It's like. Well, yeah, they, you know, because I don't know. Well, I think because I'm home all day, I'm a single dad, you know, and I'm just me and the kids, and they probably think I murdered my wife and all the rest. You can see that, you know, and they do. My next door neighbor, I mean, she seems nice. She's one of these that pretends not to see me. You know, if the odd time I bother to water the front lawn, or to be mud now, to be honest with you, I'll take the bin out or whatever. She can be out there, and unless I say hello, she pretends she's not seen me. So, of course, I hello, you know, it's just like, and she just looks like, oh God, just don't engage him. Don't engage him. He'll go away. He'll go back in a minute. He's not going to stop and talk.
I've lived in the same building for over 10 years now, and I probably know 1% of the people who live here. You know, like
weird.
Yeah,
it's true though. I kind of find it a little bit sad. Like, you know, we have neighbors that just moved in across the street or the road, and it's funny because we've only been in this house for. What it's going on 3 years soon, I think. Is that? I think so. And this is the third family that have lived in this house. So there's part of me that's wondering why. I'm like, is it haunted? Or, you know, so I'm like, do we tell the young couple that just moved in, you know, you're the third people in 3 years and that's not, you know, or do we not? And, you know.
Yeah, you say so. Have you seen the ghost yet? And just watch their faces.
Oh, that's awful. No. Mm.
But I'm a very antisocial person anyway, so because I just don't care,
like,
to be honest. And I just I don't like to engage people because they just it's going to make me sound horrible. I just get bored with them. You know, when you meet people, in the before times when we used to go to parties, and of course, you know, it's made me sound like a social animal when I say parties. You know, it was always kiddies parties. You know, but I would just get so bored, and they start telling me about their life and that, and I just don't. Seriously, don't.
Aimlessly. Yeah.
Could you not? I really don't care. Honestly, truthfully, don't care. I'm sorry, but I just don't. But that's me. I probably should just spend far too long on my own, I think.
I definitely think that's what it is. CG, you sent me your book, and it's been an awful week. It really, really has. But I started it this evening, and now I just want to, like, you know, keep reading, and you know, we have to do the show. So do you have an excerpt for us? Were you going to read a little bit for us?
I can just start off reading from the beginning if you want. And and you said like about 5 minutes?
Yeah, give or take. That's good.
Is that too long? It seems like a long time.
No.
I don't want to bore anyone.
No, I started reading. I started reading. It's really good. So I you know, you got to maybe reading to us. And yeah, I'd like that.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Chapter one. Welcome to the building, Cintra said. It sounded a little presumptuous. She was a newcomer herself, having arrived 3 weeks ago. The new neighbors must have moved in last week, judging by when a smiley-faced doormat made its appearance in front of apartment 3D. In a city that thrived on neighborly indifference, there was something a little off-putting about a grinning doormat. In Brooklyn, neighbors tended to ignore each other, but this was the new Cintra. Might as well add a dash of suburban-esque cheeriness to her new self by welcoming the couple. At least she presumed they were a couple. Thank you. We're happy to be here. The woman smiled, then turned and pointed a small black square at their door. The thing in her hand, remote-controlled door lock, went bloop. Now the man looked at Cintra. He had round, dark eyes, like woodland ponds that hid their unexpected depths. They flared at her with a hateful intensity. Jeez, what was his problem? Cintra let the couple pass by her down the stairs. The woman was petite and fleshy, with an ashy blonde braid twisted between her shoulders. Her skin was vampire pale, as if she hadn't been outside all summer or any summer. By contrast, the man looked as if he loved the sun, or the sun loved him. A few steps above them, Cintra noted the top of the man's shaved head was 2 shades lighter than the back of his sunburn-tinged neck. Must be a hat wearer. In their 40s, she guessed. Good. Cintra's hearing was sharp, her sleep surface light, sedate, well-behaved, middle-aged neighbors with a smiley-faced doormat would be ideal. On the first floor, she veered off to the mailboxes. The new neighbor's footsteps tapped lightly behind her down the porcelain tile to the lobby, which was patterned with Art Deco-style fans and cubes. Still no mail for her. The few pieces inside the metal box were addressed to her roommate, Pedro, or to occupant apartment 3C. Perhaps her change of address form had vanished into the abyss of her old neighborhood's dysfunctional post office. She'd ask her husband to bring her mail tomorrow, but who knew if he would? He was not yet convinced of new Cintra, and asking her to move out wasn't his only way of showing it. There was his passive aggressiveness as well, taking several hours to return communications, telling her he was too busy to join her in therapy. Yes, she wouldn't put it past Elliot to forget to bring her mail tomorrow, but she couldn't blame him. She was lucky he hadn't insisted on a divorce that very night. So, are you guys still awake?
You're going to stop there. Yeah, no, I had myself muted so that I didn't make noise
so
and
was,
interrupt.
Was,
but, yeah, she's...
Was that fast five minutes? That was a quick 5 minutes, that was.
I just could go a little bit. That was like, what, 4? I could keep going, but I don't want to...
No, you guys, enjoying it. I particularly enjoyed your enunciation of bloop. I thought that was brilliant. I loved that. No, I love it. Yeah, you could make a living doing that.
No, I'm definitely interested. And I've never heard the name of your main character, Cintra. I've never heard that before, and I thought that was really cool. I was like, Cintra, I like that.
Cintra, it sounds like a Toyota SUV, doesn't it?
I don't know.
I named her after a town in Portugal, but I spelled it with a C instead of an S. It's Cintra, Portugal.
Is that the place that's famous for its waves?
It might be. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
I actually know that place, funnily enough.
Yeah, there's a lot
That's
of places.
That's a small world, eh?
But it's definitely one of those books that doesn't open on a dead body, so it's kind of like, you know, we kind of open with a little, you know, it's not super weird, and then it gets a little weird, and then it starts to kind of get weirder and weirder and weirder until it's very, very weird, because that's sort of what I prefer rather than diving into, okay, there's a dead body here, and now we're going to go back and kind of show you how we got to this dead body. I mean, that's definitely a legitimate way of opening a book, but I just kind of wanted to have this little bit of a quiet opening and have little hints of strange things going on.
And kind
I
of
think
getting
for me,
to
sometimes
the
they can
like
be they can be, you know, the best kind of thrillers, because it's just that slow. I'm thinking of was it The Girl on the Train? You know, that started off very sort of, you know, pedestrian, very, you know, every day, and then it just built up and built up and built up. So yeah. Obviously, Xtina got a free copy of the book, and I didn't. So I did.
I can't wait to read it tonight in bed. Yes. Yeah, and I love the cover too. You know, I didn't know. I didn't hear that. What was that?
Oh, I'm happy to send another copy.
Did you hear that, James? Did you hear?
No, I don't know. I don't want your charity. Thank you.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
I have my pride. So,
he's joking. He doesn't have his pride.
Yeah, so,
he
no, I would, yeah. CG, I mean, what, you know, who are your inspirations for your work?
I'm definitely a classic girl, so I love the classics. So this was, you know, it was definitely influenced by Vertigo, Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Rosemary's Baby, definitely an influence, and Ira Levin's writing style was definitely an influence. I like a lot of classics probably people haven't heard of. Francis Iles is a big one. He wrote a book that turned into Suspicion with Cary Grant.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
I tend to read a lot of older stuff. Those are sort of my heavier influences. And then I like gothic stuff, so like Brontes and things.
Yeah, I had went into a thriller kick about a year ago, and I picked up a bunch of the mainstream ones, you know. And I have to say, that so many of them seemed very very formulatic, or, you know, I mean, there just seemed to be this formula that as soon as you realized what it was, you could kind of figure out what was going to happen. And, you know, I was like, you know, I don't know. So I definitely think oh, no, I was already, you know, and I think part of it too was that I'm finding a lot of the newer books these days, you don't really get a good sense of the characters. I mean, and I think it might be a style thing where you know, you have the authors who describe things too much, you know, and then you have the ones that, you know, these are short sentences, and you know, it almost leaves me feeling like I'm blind almost. And I mean, I want to see what's going on. I want to be able to, like, when I was reading the first couple of pages, and, you know, I could see Pedro at the stove, you know, with wine cooking. I could see this, you know, and that's what I like. I want to see what's going on. I want to feel like I'm there with them, or maybe I'm watching the show or something. And with some of the novels that I had read last year when I was trying, I couldn't see anything. I almost felt like there was a blinder. I had a blinder on, and I was just,
I found Dan Brown is very much like that, very minimalist. I read obviously Da Vinci Code when it was popular many, many years ago now, and it was like, it wasn't very short sentences. The description was very, very scant. But then, yeah, you compare that with somebody like Anne Rice, who you know, 16 pages to describe Bourbon Street in New Orleans. Like, oh, Anne, just get on with it. Get on with it, love. You know, come on. Seriously?
Yeah. There's got to be
And there is a fine line. There is a fine line. Yeah, as you say, you want some description to put the reader there, but don't bore them to tears, for goodness sake.
Yeah, I totally agree. Try to hit a balance. I'm not big on, there's certain things that it's hard for me to write, and I think clothing descriptions don't really, I kind of usually go back and kind of add those in, and furniture descriptions, you know, I'm just more like, let's get on with
what's happening, you know? It's funny, many years ago, I read a book, it was a submission that we got, and the author's style was, he'd introduce a character, and it was then he'd just almost, for each one, he was like, Joe Smith, and then it'd be like, 5'9", black hair, just like a description, the first one, I thought, I kind of like that. But then he did it for every character, and it was like, Frieda Jones and blonde hair, big boot, and it's like, I wasn't sure. I'm still on the fence with it. Part of me thought, this is brilliant. Because without having to spend, as writers, how do you describe people differently, rather than saying that he was 6'4" and he was how do you do that? One of my favourite, and usually in every book I've got one character, and it's my lazy way. I will just describe, he looked like, and I'll pick a movie star, a TV star. He looked like
you
Tom Berenger.
You do that, yes.
I like that. You've seen that. I do. And because then you don't have to describe them. You pick somebody everybody knows.
I like that.
He knows exactly. He looks like a tall Tom Cruise. Boom. You know exactly what he looks like. And I don't have to think of something. I have to make shit up. It's great. It's brilliant. But you can only get away with it so many times in one book, I've found.
I did that actually once. I say somebody has a Julia Roberts smile. So I did do that one time.
Yeah, it's great, but it's instantly relatable, so, but we could get away with it. But it is a difficult one. I'm not sure I'd be brave enough to do a sort of that kind of profile thing. And there's obviously this little formula, and it was a good book, cause, and it kind of fit the book, because it was like a detective policey sort of book. So it did fit the theme very, very well. There you go. There's a tip for all budding writers out there.
So, CG, what are you working on now?
I'm working on another book. It takes place. It has a backstory of this very, very famous TV show. I'll see if you guys can guess it. It was the biggest TV show by far in America for 10 years in the early to mid aughts. And it was a talent show. Any guesses?
The X Factor?
No, I guess not. Well, what is it? So there's singing involved.
Ooh. Yeah,
what
is,
I'm
going.
Yeah. Was it? I don't know what they, because I wasn't here then, so I'm at a disadvantage.
It had a very cranky Brit on it, a very cranky British guy on it.
It's got to be the X Factor, or is it Pop Idol, or American Idol?
American Idol. Yeah, there we go. We're awful at this.
It has an American Idol-like show, but that's sort of the background, and it kind of follows this woman who won it but didn't become famous, and the runner-up did become very famous, and then she starts to feel like she, for various reasons, that she has to kill this person.
Ooh,
excellent.
I like
that. Excellent. Do you know that has actually happened in England with, I think, Susan Boyle. She actually came second in the show, but she became bigger. I think it was the dance group that won, but she became a
successful
star, and they didn't.
She should have won. Mm. She definitely should have won.
Yeah. I really would.
Well, CG, I hate to say this, but we're just about out of time for our first segment. You have to promise I know you have to promise to come back and talk to us when you with your next book, and we definitely want more reading next time. You know, I was sitting back with my wine enjoying that.
Oh.
Yeah, I was, and then suddenly it was over, and like, oh, that was one of life's big disappointments for me, to be honest.
For sure.
I really enjoyed what I've read so far, and I will keep you updated while I do tend to do that when I'm reading somebody's book. You know, I'll get to a certain part, and then I'll message you on Facebook, and, oh, my God, why did you do this? So, you know, be on the lookout for those messages, because they will come. So.
Okay. If you're totally silent, then I'm going to worry now that's completely bored. But okay.
Don't worry. I'm never silent.
It's when she turns up on your doorstep that you should get worried, to be honest.
Okay. All right.
Thank you so much
for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been an
CP.
Absolute pleasure. Okay.
Right.
You have a fantastic evening. Okay. Okay, bye-bye.
Good night.
Well, it is. It's half-time already. I'm not sure how that... I don't know. Time just seems to be contracting at the moment, but we'll be right back.
5, 4...
Or...
Wrong
I can
button.
Press... It's all right. Don't worry. We can remove it in post. Don't worry. Okay.
We won't.
And we'll be... No, we won't. We'll be right back after this.
The Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back to part two.
Well, 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 welcome. I have not heard that for ages. Government Hooker by Lady Gaga. And happy memories of my wee daughter, age sort of, when I used to take her to preschool, so she was that young. She used to love singing along to that. It was great.
I didn't even know
funny.
What that was.
She was a big Lady Gaga fan, huge, huge Lady Gaga fan. I remember her once, she was only, she must have been maybe four. And she was saying, yeah, put Bathroom Mance on. What? Bathroom Mance? Well, and it took me, Bad Romance. Yeah, that one, Bathroom Mance, Daddy. You know,
so
but I'm rather frightened. She has actually grown out of Lady Gaga. I still like Lady Gaga. So I'm a bit of a fan anyway. And she now listens to, I don't know what it is. She listens. I mean, it's funny, actually, she's been getting a little bit into country music, so, I do need to
yeehaw.
Beat that out.
Yeah.
Yeehaw, you know, she has a friend who's like a bit of an older friend who's into country music, so, but she listens, her and my son, they listen to music that, I mean, literally every other word is a swear word. And it's just like, you know, she puts it on in the car and it's just like, What did they just say? What was that? What? And it's almost like, you know, some of the songs, you know, it's just constant stream of expletives. And it's like, but you know, this
it's
is what
angry.
Young people are listening to these. I mean, you know, it's a sign of us getting old, I think. You know, I remember, I heard back in the day when Elvis was big, they tried to ban him. And they did, you know, because his TV appearances, his early TV appearances, they would only show him from the sort of waist up. They wouldn't show because he was like,
right.
You know, crude. And now you've got Cardi B with the tits out, you know, on kids' telly. Junior Choice Awards, it's Cardi B and Nicki Minaj with the backsides hanging out and boobies. And it's just like, but. Each generation has had that. I mean, the 70s, you know, I grew up in the 70s, and it was very much, you know, it was long hair and all the glam rock and everything, and all the. I think that's when the whole sexual ambiguity thing sort of really started to get going. And I remember we used to watch the you know, the chart shows as a kid, because my sister was big into music and all the rest of it. And, you know, my dad would be like, you know, he's got long hair for, and he looks like a girl and all this. Like, so I think each generation, you know, I think we, as we get older, you know, we are destined to become our parents, to be honest. I constantly chastise my children about the lights. And I know I've become my dad. I know I've become my dad. So,
yeah.
And, you know, turn that light, and literally I will, and I'll do it. And I used to hate it. My mother used to do it to me. You know, I'd be almost on my way out of the door, and she'd call me back, and she'd be stood by the light switch, and she'd say, "Yeah, you left the light. You stood there, couldn't you?" And I refused to be that bad. If I'm by the light switch, I will at least flick it off. You know.
Yes,
but if
definitely.
The kid walks, you know, kid comes downstairs and walks by, I'll just say hit the light. But yes, she used to do that. Used to wind me up so much, you know, just like you stood by it. But now, frighteningly, as a grown up, I actually understand that now.
Yeah, I hate to switch the subject real quick because I had stuff to add to that. But I wanted to say that with, you know, Halloween just passing and all that good stuff, we watched that movie. What was it called now? I told you to watch it. You Shouldn't Have Left, that one. I told you, Kevin Bacon.
I have not seen
that
yet.
Yeah, we watched it Halloween night.
It's good.
And I do think it was. It wasn't amazing, which then I think my standards are too high. But I did enjoy it. It had some. I actually, you know, it's how you jump. You know, when there's a jump scare, you jump. I not only jumped, I screamed. So that's like impressive. Well,
oh,
you know, it really
that's
isn't
good.
Me.
It's a sign
so,
of a good
yeah,
movie.
But That's
the sign of a good movie.
And then I started laughing at myself. Yeah.
I mean, speaking of jump scares, and this could be the last opportunity that we get to play this on the show. So I'm in honor of the Trump Meister General, thoughts and prayers. And I know Donald does listen in every Thursday, so hopefully this will cheer him up a little bit.
I really believe I'd run in there even if I didn't have a weapon.
Nobody knows the system better than me.
Nobody knows politicians better than I do.
Nobody knows. Nobody's better.
Nobody's stronger.
There's nobody bigger or better at the military than I am.
I love the First Amendment. Nobody loves it better than me.
Nobody loves the Bible more than I do.
There is nobody that respects women more than I do.
Nobody builds walls better than me.
Nobody's in the history of this country has ever known so much about infrastructure as Donald Trump.
Nobody knows that better than me.
Nobody even understands it but me.
Nobody can do it like me.
Which is why I alone can fix it.
I have Ivy League education, smart guy.
I know words. I have the best words.
You're like, I'm a smart person.
It's this. It's not my salesmanship.
It's what?
This. You know what that is? It's the brain power.
I'm getting thousands of letters and tweets that I was right about the whole situation. I mean, I've been right about a lot of things, frankly. I should be a newscaster because I called it before the news.
I watch this stuff. You know, I'm like a guy with vision.
I have an instinct for this kind of thing.
I'm good at war. I've had a lot of wars of my own. I'm really good at war.
In my book, I predicted terrorism.
It's a rigged system. I think I've done a great service by pointing this out. I was the one that really broke the glass ceiling on behalf of women.
I think I'm doing the military a great favor.
Did a great job in Texas, a great job in Florida.
I truly believe that the first 100 days of my administration has been just about the most successful in our country's history.
It looked like a million and a half people.
Thank you, everybody. What a crowd. What a turnout.
I understand steaks. It's my favorite food, and these are the best.
That keeps me from running.
Can you believe it?
We're gonna miss the old fart. Let's admit it on the show. You know, he's been part of the team here for 4 years now. He's been around as long as we have when you think about it. So we're gonna miss old Donnie. So God bless him. That's what I say. God bless him. You know, I'm sure there'll be plenty, you know, comedy moments with Biden. So,
come on, man. You know the thing.
Yeah.
Mm.
We have Edward coming on, which is fantastic. I think you should introduce him, Xtina.
Okay, for our next guest, I'm going to get it right this time, I promise. We have 8-time Bram Stoker Award nominee, Scott Edelman. Woo!
Good evening.
I'm very sorry. I have sad news for you tonight that Scott Edelman cannot be here. You have risen, Edward. You have said his name, I think, the 3 times that are necessary, just as with Beetlejuice. And my alter ego has shown up instead. So there will be no Scott Edelman tonight.
Well, that's fine. Hey, Edward, thank you so much for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure.
But I do understand why you have made this mistake, because when I was – you must have been reading my high school writings, because when I was in high school, I wrote so many articles for the school newspaper. They said, we cannot publish anything more by Scott Edelman. Come up with an alter ego. So half of my articles were published under the name Edward – L, middle initial, man. So if you look closely, it would be Edelman. But
I like that.
You were obviously thinking of that, so it's understood why you made that mistake.
It's exactly what I was doing. Yes, you're right.
So you can be forgiven. It was a deliberate homage, a deliberate allusion to my checkered past.
Awesome. And Scott is here to talk to us about his book, Things That Never Happened. And tell us something about it.
Oh, well, this is the true reason you will remember the 5th of November, not because of the episode we're doing or anything else going on in the world on this November 5th, but because of this book. It collects 13 of my stories written over the years, and four of them have been finalists for the Bram Stoker Award. I don't know if people even remember who Susan Lucci is. People told me I should stop calling myself Susan Lucci. I am glad, because someone said you must update your references, because I am the Susan Lucci of the Bram Stoker Award. 0 and 8. No one has been nominated so many times without winning. Of course, there are people who have lost more. Stephen King has lost many more than I have, but he's won a few somehow. I don't understand how that happened. But so anyway.
Boo!
Oh, he's a good guy.
Speaking of Susan Lucci, does she still play Erica and All My Children? I mean, is that what she still is doing? I don't know.
Is she not long retired? I don't know. I know she lost. She was nominated for Daytime Emmy 25 or 30 times, and then finally, after 30 years or something, she won one. And maybe that's what will happen to me. I don't know. But over the last 20 years, I've been nominated 8 times, 4 of them stories in this book that I've collected from various previous publication. So there are 13. It's from Cemetery Dance Press, a wonderful press, and I'm so pleased. It just came out September 22nd. So I got a wonderful response.
Wow.
Publishers Weekly said his talent is undeniable. You know, people always watch for reviews. Will anybody say good things about it, or will they? You know, how writers are. They read these. They say don't read your reviews. You only cry. But Publishers Weekly had a nice long review and said his talent is undeniable. So I was thrilled, as was the publisher.
That's awesome. That is awesome. You know, I have a couple of poetry books out on Amazon, and my oldest book, Baby, I had not checked for reviews in quite some time, and I made the mistake of, I noticed that they, you know, where it shows you the stars or how many stars you, it didn't have as many as it normally did. And I'm like, what is going on here? So I checked, and I had my first bad review. So I'm thinking I've made it if I've had a bad review, you know. So, I mean, there was a part of me that wanted to go cry in a corner, but then the other part of me was like, I have a bad review. I have finally made it.
Well, it is much better to be hated than to have people just go, you want to love you or hate you. At least you've reached them. If you can cause them to throw the book across the room, you know, that's success, right?
You know what? I think you're right. I do. You know, something that gives you any kind of reaction, I suppose, because, you know, we've talked on the show, you know, about scary movies and stuff like that, and the movie, I think it was Hereditary, I think it was the one that, you know, James loved it. He thought it was a great movie, seen it a bunch of times. And, you know, I can say I didn't love it, but there was a scene in it that scared me so bad that it actually wasn't. It was the she was up on the ceiling. The ceiling?
Okay.
That just for a good month after that, after I saw the movie, I would go into the bathroom at like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, and, you know, have to consciously not look up on the ceiling because I was terrified it was going to be there. So, I mean, even though I can say that I was not a huge fan of the movie, because it affected me so much, it did its job, I suppose. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, and I sometimes give readings, and I see, you know, there are people who like what you're reading when you give a reading, and every once in a while someone gets up and walks out in a huff, particularly when it's a horror story, and they're thinking, well, I wanted something horrifying, but not – not quite that horrifying. And so that happens every. For some reason, the woman did not like the part of the story where the father took the child's gerbil and threw it in the microwave. I really don't understand what the problem was. But that was long ago and far away. But that was one of my earlier stories. But
yeah, that sounds pretty gruesome. But I kind of laughed, so maybe I'm.
Well, some people were meant to be so over the top. It was meant to be totally ridiculous. And sometimes horror can do that, particularly if you watch certain zombie movies. If you watch the Peter Jackson movie, Dead Alive, I think it was known as something different in the UK versus the US. It's called Brain Dead, I think, in the UK.
Yes.
A lot of,
that was a Peter Jackson movie. I mean, he set out to be as gross as he could. It just got ridiculous. It really did. It was just like, how much more gross can we get? But obviously, Peter Jackson, it's a classic now, but I remember seeing that back in the early 80s, I think. And I probably wouldn't watch it again because it wasn't that good.
So, do you have a reading for us, Scott?
Oh, of course I have a reading for you. Of course. It is from the final story in the book, a story called It's Only a Story. I wrote it to help celebrate the 200th anniversary of the publication of Frankenstein, that an anthology was coming out, and they were looking for stories which would be about the whole Frankenstein mythos. And I took my inspiration from that night when Percy Bysshe Shelley and Lord Byron and Mary Shelley were sitting around and said, hey, what do we got to do here? Why don't we make up scary stories? They were tired of reading scary stories. So I sort of reimagined that night and brought it to a modern-day suburbia with a bunch of kids. So I've got three kids here, Biff and Ron and Johnny. And Biff loves playing those horror games, and Ron loves reading horror comics, and Johnny watches horror movies, and something strange happens one day when they all happen to be together in their room doing their thing. So I'll just read this brief scene from the beginning of the story.
Awesome.
This is boring, Ron said. Killing these guys, it's gotten too easy. I mean, I've smashed them with a hammer like a million times already. Ron tilted his head back and looked at his upside-down friend. His eyeglasses slid to his forehead and his friend grew fuzzy. Yeah, and I've read this one too many times already, he said, pushing the lenses back up to his nose. If it wasn't so late, we could make a run to the comic shop, but it's already closed. Johnny cut off the sound on his horror movie and let the monsters fight on in silence. He smiled in the flashing light of the screen. And I already know who's going to win when Reptilicus finally gets around to fighting Apoctopus, he said. They sat without speaking for a few uncomfortable moments until Biff, always the first one for action, piped up. So what are we going to do about it? No one answered. But then Johnny smiled. I have an idea, he said. Why don't we all try to come up with our own horror stories? Biff looked at Ron. Ron looked at Biff. And then they both looked back at Johnny. Great idea, said Biff. You first. No, that's not why. Hey, it was your idea, added Ron, glad it looked like he wouldn't have to be the one to start. He dropped his comic. It wasn't one of the valuable ones. Those never left his own bedroom. And turned to place his back against the wall. Johnny looked nervously around the room with no idea how to begin. He forced his hands deep into his pockets so he wouldn't feel compelled to chew his fingernails again. His mind was blank as he gazed about until his eyes fell on the controller Biff had tossed aside. Then, slowly, haltingly, he began to speak. There was this factory, see, where this company made computer games, he said, and the bosses were horrible, almost as bad as the big boss monsters in the games. They wouldn't let the workers take any breaks, not to eat, not to go to the bathroom, and not even to sleep. Not even to sleep, repeated Biff, uncertain whether he was interrupting because the story made no sense or because it made too much sense. He read the articles, too. Well, they had to sleep in the factory and were allowed just enough sleep to be able to keep working, continued Johnny, but barely that. And so some died from exhaustion. Some got so lonely and depressed because they couldn't see their families. They went up to the factory roof and jumped off and killed themselves. And though the bosses took the bodies away, the souls of the workers, they stayed behind. And because they hated the people who bought the games, who they felt because they wouldn't have to make them if no one bought the games they made, right, were the real bosses behind the bosses who killed them. Their spirits went went into the game, and every once in a while those spirits can get out, reach out, and like take over who's playing. Ron glanced over at Biff, who was the best gamer of the three, expecting him to break into the story again, but his friend's intense expression told him no. So one day this kid's playing, and there's a spark, see, a short circuit, I guess, and suddenly the kid's inside the game, and he loves it, and he goes around killing zombies, many endless zombies, and then he killed the big boss, too, the zombie king over all the other zombies, and he see, he wins the game. And then right when the game's over, it all fades away, the world within the game, and he suddenly sees he was never in a game at all. He was always in the real world, our world. It was a lie, so he hadn't been killing zombies. After all, he killed his friends, all of his friends, and so he gets locked up. His parents throw the kid's console away, and you think that would be the end of it, but then some other kid finds it in the trash or maybe the yard sale, and what happened to the first kid happened to him, too. And is this story going anywhere, asked Ron. No, wait, let me think. I'll figure out an ending. Just give me a second. That wasn't scary, said Biff. Not scary at all. Oh, you think you could do better, said Johnny. Biff looked away. How about you, Ron? Hey, why don't we check on that new family who moved in a couple of blocks away, Ron blurted out. I heard my parents talking about them. They've got a kid. Yeah, let's go, said Biff, jumping up and leaving the room before either of the others could say anything more. Ron hurried after him. You guys better have some good stories tomorrow, Johnny shouted and rushed after. And we stopped there. And they eventually meet the new kid on the block, a young girl named Mary. And we sort of replicate what happened. As people, kids take turns telling each other stories, and it doesn't end well. But it's only a story.
You were reading that like you were actually, you know, like acting it out sort of. So when you stopped, I was like, is he still reading? I don't get it.
I was enjoying that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like
well,
this, by the way.
Kids in that story do eventually get to tell their own attempt at telling a story, as does the girl Mary. And it's all sort of inspired by Mary Shelley and Lord Byron and Percy Bysshe when they were all sitting around one day. And that was sort of my homage to the origination of Frankenstein, written on its 200th anniversary of publication, mashed up with Stranger Things, sort of.
I think I am the only person that has not seen. Okay, I've seen some of Stranger Things, and I think I like the concept, and I really like the idea that it's set in, you know, the 80s. But there was I don't know. It was too strange. You know, I say that there has to be like a tiny little bit of believability somehow for me, and it lost me once. I don't even know, which is weird because I'm like a huge fan of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and stuff like that. So I don't know. Maybe I need to give it another shot because like the feel of it.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer was you know, so true to life, wasn't it? Stranger Things taps into the nostalgia, the wave of nostalgia. You know, people hanker for the 80s where things were simple. And I remember we all rode around on our bikes and all the rest of it.
Valentine's Day to that. It was a love song to that period of time.
So, oh, definitely.
I wonder how you had to live through it.
Yeah, I don't think it would work set in, you know, contemporary times. There's just something about the innocence of it and the, you know, the lack of cell phones and the kids that they're out and nowadays they'd have to check in on the cell phones to mummy every 10 minutes and, you know, just, you know,
do kids even hang out like that anymore? Yeah, kids don't even hang out like that anymore. When I was like 10, 12, 13, you know, around that age or whatever, I was, you know, out the door when the sun came up and I didn't have to come back until it was getting dark. And my mom had no idea where I was.
I saw a great meme actually the other day where it was just like a whole bunch of bikes on somebody's front lawn. They said, back in my day, that's where you knew everybody was. And it was mm-hmm. literally, yep. you know, you could say, you know, and you'd see, you've got one, two, three, oh, so, you know, you'd recognize the bikes and you know who's who and who was where. And like you say, literally, I mean, we would, certainly in summer vacation, we would set off you know, in the morning. Literally, go out and play. Just get out and play. And we'd go.
Yep.
And we would be gone all day.
All day.
You know, and as long as you were home when the streetlights came on, all was good.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so,
yeah.
Literally, we'd be gone from, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night, and no checking in, none of that.
Yeah.
We were just gone.
You know, I've mentioned this before.
Oh, thank God for childhood without cell phones.
Yes. You know, I belong to some groups on Facebook of, you know, mothers of teenagers, and, you know, because I thought I was having some trouble with my my teen son, which, you know, after reading a bunch of their posts, I'm very blessed. So but anyway, some of them are such, what is the phrase, helicopter parents. And, you know, this one lady was like, you know, how do you, you know, go about, you know, letting your teens and, you know, have their private time and whatever. They're talking about, like, going into the kids' room. Well, I mean, you know, why are we knock or whatever? Some of these mothers were like, we don't allow closed doors in our house. And this group is for, you know, mothers of teenage sons. That they're saying they don't allow the door to be shut. And I'm just thinking, do they remember what it was like to be kids?
Yeah, I insist. You keep that.
I don't want to.
You know, there's this whole thing about, oh, you know, you should don't let the kids have a computer, and they should be in a family area, and it should be downstairs where you can see it. I don't want to see the porn my teenage son's watching. I'm sure he doesn't want to see whatever I watch, you know. And like, it's funny, yeah. He funnily enough, ironically enough, he had a girl over this evening, and it's like, he's 18 now, but he's still, keep your door open. I said, no, seriously, keep it fucking shut, and if there's stuff going on, lock it, because I don't want his sister wandering in, you know. I mean, it's just literally, so I'm that parent. I said, just literally close door, just, and I've said my one proviso, you know, having been through it with my stepson, no drugs, seriously. You don't even smoke a fucking cigarette in this house. If you do, I will beat you. And to be touch wood, he's just no interest in that at all, you know. He's just not.
Yeah.
I have beers in the fridge, and the other cage I say, you know, grab yourself. He doesn't even ask for one. He just doesn't take them. He's just like not interested.
Yeah.
If I say, you know, grab yourself a beer, then he'll do so. But which is great, you know. I know, you know, he's doing. Mm-hmm. He's got a bit of a harem going, actually. He's not, you know. So are you dating her? No, I don't want to settle down. I'm not. No, but and then he's just got this. To my knowledge, he's got at least 3 on the go right now. Now he's driving on his own as well. He's just like a kid in a sweet shop, which is, you know. And I mean, I remember what I was like at that age. So best of luck to the kid, is what I say. he's got a family tradition to uphold, you know. Moving on.
Yeah, right. You know, I could keep going because it's like, you know, when you're a parent, holy, you know, there's no way to prepare. There really isn't. So, yeah, definitely moving on. What are you working? So, Scott, what are you working on now?
Well, a lot depends on what happens tonight. Since we're in the part of the world we're not paying attention to. I have a story I may or may not write. There's a story that I had this idea for a story a month ago, and I said, well, I should have either written this 3.5 years ago or a month from now, and I'm hoping that story would not be unnecessary. But the story I have been working on is a horror story set in Antarctica, inspired by a trip I took there 7 or 8 years ago, I believe. And it's an interesting place, and you can feel the souls of various people who visited there and did or did not survive the early journeys to explore the place. Some of them made it home, some of them may have didn't, but spending the winter there when you didn't intend to because your ship was trapped in the ice is not a fun thing.
Yeah.
So that's the story I've implied. I have a few thousand words written on it now, and once my mind is not focused on a different horror story unfolding elsewhere about which I'll say nothing more, I will push on that particular one.
Awesome. You know, I was wondering with your the joking here with the things that never happened.
Study on.
I know, with the things that never happened, the 13 short stories. Do you ever have a short story with the characters maybe come back to you and you think that maybe they have more in them than their short, you know?
No, I am a short story guy. That's how I ended up being a short story person, not a novelist. I recently published my 102nd short story. I really do not think at novel length. I published a novel 30 years ago entirely by accident. I wrote a short story, and I rewrote it, and it doubled in size, and I rewrote it again, it doubled in size again. It was like The Blob, and I kept adding subtext and other... And it turned into a novel. So it was not that I ever sat down and said, oh, I'm going to write a novel. It's that I wrote. That's the only time that happened. But I prefer the short story line for it to get in there and punch and get right out so that you can digest the whole thing in one sitting. That's the way I like to eat my candy. I'm not providing these long meals and these long, big landscapes where you can go in and read it over the summer. I am not a beach book person, the way they use the word beach book for these, you know, big, long, fat books that you can take on vacation. I like, you know, being short. So, no. I've never thought to go back and read. You know, I'm already telling you in my short story the single most important moment in that person's life. And once I've told you that most important thing and what their life is after that thing happens, I really don't have anything more to say. Of course, you could take any character all the way to the end. Eventually, they die. Even if they have a happy ending to the story, they die, and the universe, the sun goes nova, and we have the heat death of the universe. So anything carried far enough. But I just do the nice little piece of it for you, you can have it all at once.
I do have to say, I've never been one to. Because I was a person who liked the really thick books, and I wanted, you know, the bigger the better and stuff like that. But I do have to say that short stories seem to pack more of a they give you more of a wow, more of a, you know, I mean, in my experience anyway, they definitely do seem to the twist is always holy crap, you know, I mean, as opposed to a novel, they do seem to hit you harder for some reason.
Everyone knows I've got nothing against big fat books. I mean, I love Stephen King's The Stand. I love John Crowley's Little Big. I love big fat books, but in terms of me writing them and what comes into my head, I always think this short, intense, think of it as Pop Rocks. I'm giving you Pop Rocks.
I love Pop Rocks. That's great.
Well, good. I've got 13 different packages of Pop Rocks and things that never happen. You open them one at a time, one big intense explosion in your head.
That's great. I think that we are just about out of time for our show. So, Scott, you have to tell us real fast where we can find you online.
Well, you can find me at scottedelman.com, where you have explanations of all the stories, all the comic books I used to write. I worked at Marvel Comics for a while. You'll find a link to my own podcast, Eating the Fantastic, where I have a meal and interview people on Twitter, at Scott Edelman. I tweet a lot. Unfortunately, you might find some political stuff, and hopefully we'll be getting through that in a little bit. But that's where everyone can find me.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
I'll get your links put up on our Facebook page. If anybody wants to stalk you, then go there and do it. And I can't wait. You have to get writing like a whole bunch more short stories so we can have you back in the show soon.
Anytime.
And hopefully,
and I'm sure
accidental novel.
Will be there as well, because this has just been Edward talking to you.
Yeah, Edward and Scott, it's been an absolute pleasure. And you have a great rest of your evening, sir.
You do the same.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Well, the rest of my evening, I've just got to bed. So it is. Time has beaten us once again. And it is, I'm afraid, time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.
Came a long way to be here yesterday, and I left you so long on this avenue. And here I stand in the strangest land, not knowing what to say or do. As I gaze around at these strangers in town, I guess the only stranger is me. And I wonder, yes, I wonder, is this the way life's meant to be? Although it's only a day since I was taken away, I'm left standing here looking in wonder. Oh, the ground at my feet, maybe it's just the old street, but everything that I know lies under. And when I see what they've done to the place that was home, of a town where people know.